All right. Thank you, Ryan. So I guess in the roundtable discussion, I'm an entomologist for LSU, but also a part-time PhD student as well. So that's why this is some of my preliminary research that we started in the past year. So I'll give you a little snapshot on Louisiana cotton. Last year, we had 130,000 acres in the Mississippi Delta. That was our lowest acres that we've had to date in Louisiana. However, we broke a state record with a little over 1,320 pounds. So that was a little bit over 300-pound yield average that we broke. So even though we had the lowest amount of acres in the state, we did really well on yields. Of that, we lost 28,426 bales to insects. So with most states in the Delta, we have a very severe insect problem that is it's composed of a multitude of pests, and it can be very difficult to control. But our cotton is typically centrally located along the Mississippi River, starting all the way from Arkansas East Carroll Parish, moving down into Tensaw Parish, which is highlighted in dark green. That's our largest cotton-producing parish, moving down the river and ending in Point Capiz. So it was really kind of centered along six or seven parishes there in the state. So we had the parishes that did have cotton had quite a few acres, whereas some of them didn't have had about 100 to 200 acres. So moving on to two-spotted spider mite, this is the object of my research. It's a temperate to subtropical pest. It's typically found in greenhouses or glass houses in the UK as well as the United States, where it can artificially overwinter, making it a perennial pest in most places, especially in greenhouses. It's extremely phytophagous. It's a foliage feeder of all plant stages, and is a serious pest in cotton as well as many other plants that are grown around the state. This is a picture of a two-spotted spider mite. This is a gravid female, and you can see kind of clustered around her are eggs. And it's kind of hard to tell in that picture, but spider mites, when they infest cotton, will produce webbing, and that kind of produces an insulating barrier to abiotic factors as well as other biotic factors. So it's kind of a protective layer that these spider mites spin around them that help kind of protect them underneath the side of leaves in cotton as well as other plants. So infestations typically are a result of insecticide treatments for other pests. These are primarily confined to the plant bug and cotton bollworm, where we use a lot of pyrethroids and acephate, which remove the natural predators such as western flower thrips, many thrip species, as well as other predatory mites. Hot, dry weather, mite populations have been demonstrated to grow almost at an exponential level in hot, dry weather. Later adequate fall or spring plant vegetation management is one of the biggest issues we face in Louisiana as well as the Delta. Typically, if a farmer plants in a dirty field where he leaves henbit or some other weed host, that's where we typically get most of the phone calls where we see a lot of these spider mites coming into cotton, is that the problem started early when they didn't completely burn that field down. We've also seen some pretty extreme mite populations close to tree lines or other crops. We see a lot of spider mites that come out of corn, especially in hot, dry weather. They'll crawl across the turn row and infest the cotton from the edge and move in, as well as they'll kind of rope out of trees. And this has been demonstrated to where spider mites especially will typically overwinter under the bark of trees. Well, when it's windy, they'll rope out of these trees and move on to some of these other alternative hosts, such as grasses, and then move on to cotton. The infestation in Louisiana resulted in 1.1 applications, costing $7.70 per acre. So it can get to be an expensive pest that especially Louisiana as well as other producers have to face on a yearly basis. So spider mite injury to cotton, they typically feed on the epidermal cells of the abaxial side of the leaves. Feeding results in damage and essentially water loss. So what happens is the spider mites feed on the epidermal, the mesophyll of the cell collapses and then dies and turns into a necrotic spot. Russeting or bronzing is the initial sign of injury, so spider mites will tell on themselves, especially when injury becomes severe in a field, and it typically starts from the edge and moves to the middle. And then severe injury often results in defoliation of the crop and eventual fruit shed, which can severely limit yield, especially when it's important when our cotton's only running 80 cents a pound, so it can get expensive. This is a typical sign of the spider mite infestation. This is the russeting or the bronzing of the leaves. And typically it'll start from the apex or the middle of the leaf and work its way out. And eventually they'll move on to other leaves as they come in contact with each other in the plant canopy. So neonicotinoid seed treatments have been shown. Skrpanik et al. Just published a paper that has showed its effect on cotton hormone expression as well as tomatoes and corn by the suppression of plant defense genes. These alter the levels of phytohormone involved in induced defense, and specifically the jasmonic acid, which is the focus of our experiment, is I kind of take all hormone that plants use for anything from abiotic to biotic factor, so from weather to insect feeding to just about anything. Jasmonic acid is a very important pathway in many plants that is expressed when some kind of external stimuli is exposed to the plant. So that's, we measure jasmonic acid and JAILE, or jasmonic acid conjugated with isoleucine, in our phytohormone expression. And I'll get to that in the later slides. This shows reduced resistance to non-susceptible herbivores, and there's increased susceptibility to infestation throughout the growing season. So what these neonicotinoid treatments are doing is they're suppressing these naturally occurring plant hormones and allowing these spider mites to build on them without the cotton naturally suppressing these populations and coming back with their own defenses. So our objective was to test the effects of nicotinoid seed treatments on hormone modulation in cotton and their effects on the populations of two spotted spider mites. So our study was located in St. Joseph, Louisiana. We used Phytogens 499 non-treated black seed as our control. We had 24 plots, and the conditions were met from the LSU Ag Center as far as weeds and insect control. We controlled insects in our test plot to remove the factor of having beneficial organisms such as thrips and other predatory mites from skewing our data. So we wanted, basically what we did was we applied a lot of insecticides to our crop to get these mites to flare and also to help kind of remove some noise from our data. Our treatments were a foliar 10 molar concentration of jasmonic acid and 1 ounce of ataxazole, or Zeal. We had a seed applied, 0.375 milligrams of AI per seed of imidacloprid, as well as a true non-treated control. And we sampled 10 leaves from the top 5 nodes, 6 and 14 days after application. So what we did was we sampled the leaves, put them in a paper bag, brought them back to the lab, ran them through a mite brushing machine, and used a dissecting scope to basically separate out and identify spider mites. And we used an ANOVA and a factorial AOV to separate the means. And with our phytohormone analysis, we pulled tissue samples from 5 nodes 14 days after application of our foliar insecticides. Individual samples were weighed and then immersed in liquid nitrogen and shipped to the Donald Danforth Plant Institute in St. Louis, Missouri, packed in dry ice to preserve the integrity of the samples, and phytoanalysis was run there. So moving on to the results, and what I want you to take from this slide is that 86 days after planting, the imidacloprid-treated seed had statistically more mites than the non-treated. Now the non-treated did have mites, but it appears that the imidacloprid did affect the number of mites that we found on our treatments. So this is without any neonicotinoid foliar treatments, no PGRs, no chemicals or products that would have affected plant hormone expression. The only thing insecticide we used was acephate to control the predatory insects that may be there to skew our results. So this is kind of an anecdotal picture, and it's really kind of tough to see up there, but with the imidacloprid, you can see just there's less lint than our non-treated control. And then getting into more of the results, the imidacloprid treated treatments are in green, and this is on the y-axis. There's JA and nanograms per gram of fresh weight. And so what we saw was the expression of jasmonic acid was suppressed in the imidacloprid treated plots right here, where you move down to ataxazole, it was a little bit more increased, and then when you moved over to imidacloprid and jasmonic acid, it was substantially higher, significantly higher. And what we found is that the addition of the jasmonic acid may have overcome the influence the imidacloprid may have had on the suppressive nature, allowing the levels in the plant to increase and affect the mites. So moving on to our JAILE, this is jasmonic acid conjugated with isoleucine, we're seeing that the largest amount was found in the true non-treated control. And this may be due to the fact that we had a large number of mites on it actually eliciting the pathway in the cotton to produce JAILE. So it was statistically higher than all other treatments tested, and that seems to be a logical reason why we found such high numbers. Where you move on to imidacloprid in the non-treated control, it's suppressed. And that may be due to the fact that the imidacloprid is suppressing the pathway, the jasmonic acid pathway, and not allowing it to convert to JAILE and then move downstream as it inactivates the JAS proteins. The non-treated control with ataxazole had the lowest amount of expression numerically, and we attribute this due to the ataxazole is actually doing what it's designed to do. It's controlling the mites and before they could actually injure the cotton and allow a response from the JAILE. Whereas you move on to the imidacloprid and the JA, The JA was not, in this instance, was not strong enough to overcome, at least we speculate, the imidacloprid suppressive nature of what it's doing to the plant hormones. And moving across seed treatments, so with JLILE, we saw the highest expression in an untreated, which was to be expected. However, when we applied the jasmonic acid, we may think it may have also, in this set, just overcome, or it was almost too much jasmonic acid for the plant and wasn't allowed to express in JLILE. So that's something we need to investigate in our future research. And this moving on to yield. So our highest yielding treatments were one that had itaxazole in it, whereas the non-treated control, as well as imidacloprid and itaxazole. So there again, the miticide is controlling these mites. But what's interesting is you move on to the non-treated control and jasmonic acid, we saw a significantly higher yield increase without imidacloprid. So that may be due to the imidacloprid suppressing those hormone pathways and limiting the amount of yield that we're seeing from our test. So in conclusion, the neonicotinoid seed treatments significantly increased our spider mite numbers in the absence of beneficial insects as well as other chemical factors and other hormone modulating factors. Phytohormone levels may be negatively affected by neonicotinoid insecticides. It's been demonstrated by Skrpanik et al. And other papers. And foliar applications of jasmonic acid are not alone extremely expensive. They're not a curative approach to controlling spider mites in cotton. And these spider mite issues may be intensified due to seed treatments and foliar applications of neonicotinoids. So as a whole, the Ag Center is not recommending seed treatments as a practice to use. They're a very good best management practice. They provide a wealth of protection from our cotton. However, just the implication is with one action, there may be a risk-reward response. So by using neonicotinoid seed treatments as a seed treatment and possibly foliar, you may be negatively influencing hormones in the cotton plant, allowing the buildup of other secondary populations of insects. Foliar applications of JA should be used to prime plant defenses and not as a curative, and JA applications are used as almost a preventative, so something that could be applied at bloom before two-spotted spider mite populations have begun to infest the field. And with that, I'd like to thank the Ag Center and Cotton Incorporated, as well as my fellow lab mates in the Cotton Entomology Program at the Ag Center. I'll take any questions.
Got time for a couple of questions?
I didn't do that good of a job. Come on. Yes, sir.
It was demonstrated that the neonicotinoids cause hormone imbalances.
Could you repeat that, please?
It was demonstrated that neonic cause hormone imbalances. There's a study from the game a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How do you put this into the system?
I'm not familiar with that study. I'd have to go back and do a little more research, but I'm not familiar with that study. All right.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, thanks, Ron.